Good evening, everyone. Happy to be here with all of you for my first time speaking to the Spirit Rock LGBT Sangha. Feels very close to home because I've been to Spirit Rock many times, including on the to the LGBT retreat at Spirit Rock that used to be held in person. And that was a great experience in my life. So we're going to start tonight with some meditation practice. Is there anybody here who is new to meditation, maybe meditating for the first time or would like some guidance? You could just raise your physical hand or raise a Zoom hand if you don't have your camera on. Oh, it sounds like we have a very well-practiced group here tonight. Great. So I'm going to ring a bell and we'll just do some sitting meditation for about 30 minutes. And then we'll have a Dharma talk and we'll do some discussion and Q&A and call it a night. So find your comfortable seat, all of your experience so you know what that's like. And get ready to follow your breath for a while. I might give a few little tips during our 30 minutes, but mostly we're just going to have quiet. Welcome back, everyone. Please take a minute to stretch. Move your body any way you need to. And give yourself a real or proverbial pat on the back for showing up tonight to do something wholesome and good for yourself. If you're not on camera yet, and you could be on camera, I'd love to go around and hear where everybody is from. Some of us have where we're from on our screens, but I'd like to hear everybody's voice. So if we could start with Amber.
I'm near Santa Fe, New Mexico.
And does anybody want to go next?
I'm in Steuben, Maine.
Maine. Okay.
I'm in Oakland, California, but transplanted from Indianapolis decades ago.
Hi, I'm Lisa, Portland, Oregon.
Then same. Also Portland, Oregon.
Karen in Corvallis, Oregon.
I'm Shelley, and I have lived in both Portland and Eugene, Oregon, and I'm currently in San Francisco.
I'm Monica. I'm in San Francisco.
I'm Rodrigo, and I'm in Pacifica.
I'm David, and I'm in New York City.
I am Jen. I am in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Anybody we haven't heard from yet who wants to share where they're from? Okay, well, we are spread out. As I'm in Oakland, on a lonely land, and happy to be with you all tonight. My topic tonight is on a Tibetan word, Tibetan concept called lungta. And lungta is a Tibetan word that means wind horse. And wind horse is a whole big concept that we can talk about for hours, but I'm going to try and consolidate it into a short explanation, and then we'll do some discussion and see what we come up with. So I'm sure everybody here who lives in the Western world has seen Tibetan prayer flags by now, especially if you're practicing in any Buddhist community. Those are those all different color flags that Tibetan people use to put out to send their prayers out to the winds so that they can be carried in all directions. And some of the prayer flags, most of them have four animals on the outside and one on the inside. And the ones on the around the outside are the Garuda, which is a mythical animal, and the dragon and the lion and the tiger. And in the center is the wind horse. And the wind horse has the energy of being able to hold all those other energies together. So it's a very powerful force. And it's also an energy that we all possess inside of us. So some of you have probably heard of basic goodness, Buddha nature, that's connected to wind horse energy. And it's kind of like a confidence without ego. So there's this quality of being sure that you're connected with your own integrity and you're letting go of your agenda. So you're kind of showing up in the world with curiosity, with an open mind, and just a willingness to be with things as they are. So that's a little bit of the wind horse energy. Like a lot of Buddhist concepts, it's quite diverse in the ways that you can approach it and has a lot of expansiveness to it. But in Buddhism, there's often this talking about the absolute and the relative. And the absolute is kind of the teachings of enlightenment and emptiness and the spaciousness. So the absolute of Lungta would be an energy that can hold all things without any kind of judgment or good or bad or any kind of opposition, just an ability to hold all things. And that's a very kind of absoluteness that can't really be poked at in any way. It just kind of is there in a spacious state. And it's also the Dharmic path would be considered part of the absolute. And it's this idea that we have this energy, this Lungta energy, we possess it, but it's not ours. So again, it's like that really expansiveness. And we all can touch into that and feel it at times in our lives. And probably one of the reasons we're drawn to Buddhism is that we'd like to feel it more. So it's something that we can add to, you know, thinking about how our meditation practice is going. And then, you know, the other thing I think about wind horse is like the idea of riding a horse, which I actually don't enjoy very much riding horses, but if you think about the kind of posture you need to ride a horse, you have to be very upright and you have to be grounded and secure in your seat on the horse. And imagine you're riding the horse and the wind is coming wildly from all directions, but you're able to maintain your seat. And that is, you know, the mind of equanimity, where, you know, you're living your daily life and this is coming at you and somebody's angry and somebody's sad and somebody's irritating you over there, and you're maintaining the mind of equanimity. So you're kind of present with all of that, but you're not reacting to any of that. So that's very kind of related to the energy of Lungta as well. So to me, then we come into the relative world, which is the world we have to live in, where none of us are enlightened and we're all, you know, dutifully trying our best to meditate and train our minds and be the best we can be, and hopefully to benefit all beings, or at least one or two. So I see the Lungta practice as inspiring me on a daily basis to align myself with my integrity and to take the time to feel into what is right for me, what is true, what I'm feeling in that moment without being kind of pulled off of that center by outer circumstances. So I have like a couple of examples to give you, and then we can talk a little bit more about meditation and how it fits in. So I try to like give real world examples. So you want to have a hard conversation with somebody. Somebody has done something to offend you, or there's an issue up that you feel like there's going to be some resistance to. So we often go into those conversations with our position, right? And we want to convince that other person to understand our position. So if we're applying wind horse, we wouldn't be avoiding the difficulty of that dynamic. So often we want to just kind of avoid those dynamics, but with wind horse, we would take that energy and sink into how it really feels for us. You know, just the fact that we're having that conflict with somebody or that discord, like what does that really feel like in our bodies and our minds and our hearts? And then take the time to metabolize those feelings and find where our integrity is what is true for me. And then I'm going to be able to show up in a conversation with that person without an agenda, because I already know what is true for me. And when I know what's true for me, I'm willing to hear what somebody else has to say with an open mind. So that truth might dissolve and I might, you know, find out something new and exciting, and the curiosity of that could open up some other completely different idea than what I've already held as mine. So it's the idea of like being in your integrity, but not being stuck in your own opinion and showing up without ego. So all of these things are very hard to do, because as human beings, we're wired to be in our egos, be attached to our opinions, and think we're right. So infusing ourselves with the energy of Lungta can help us to shift away from those human habits. And it really creates a lot more intimacy with the people around us, with the world around us, because we're actually curious instead of right. So I try to remind myself a lot, I'd rather be curious than right. So that's kind of one of the examples I would use of where Lungta can show up in your life and be helpful. The second example is feeling into the white supremacy culture that we live in and the burden that we all carry because of that, whether we're white or not. That's that culture of supremacy, homophobia, misogyny, ableism, all of that culture that is so strong that we're all living in. How does that suck our energy, and how does that try to destroy us and keep us disconnected from our power? So employing Lungta, we try to stay connected with that basic goodness that we have and that openness and curiosity. And that gives us a lot of energy, because we need that if we're going to work to take down these structures that are killing us all. So staying in touch with that, staying connected to our meditation practice, these are practices that can help us in, like, not only in our intimate relationships or our work or our Sangha relationships, but it really goes way beyond that to creating really Shoyang Trungpa Rinpoche, who was Pema Shojin's first teacher. He talked about the setting sun world and the rising sun, and, you know, really creating the world that we want of enlightened beings, where we're all caring for each other and really putting the Bodhisattva principles of putting others ahead of ourselves. So wind horse energy is part of that as well. And the third example I would give would be Tong Lin, which some of you may have heard of. If not, Tong Lin is a Tibetan word, and it means taking and giving. It's a very simple practice, and I employ it a lot when I'm in the face of immense suffering that I cannot do anything about. And there's a lot of opportunity for that in the world, you know, just walking down the street and seeing homeless people, seeing people who may be having a mental health crisis, just seeing somebody who looks really sad. So the practice of Tong Lin is to breathe in the suffering of others, and it could be just one individual, and then breathing out relief. And it really shifts the energy from feeling maybe sorry for people or just feeling overwhelmed by suffering to actually, I can shift the energy in myself. I might not be able to do anything directly to relieve their suffering, but it is opening me up and opening my heart. And the expansion of that is, you know, maybe later I'm going to be touched to, oh, I think I'm going to go and volunteer to provide some services for people who are unhoused, or, you know, it just like moves me to go and be of benefit to others. So in the moment, it might feel like, well, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? It doesn't seem to be really doing any good. But it is like an alchemical shift in oneself to do this practice. If you're interested in learning more about Tonglin, Pema Chodron has a great book called Tonglin. So you could check that out. A lot of Tibetan teachers have written about Tonglin, and it's a very prevalent practice in Tibetan Buddhism. So I just want to bring us back to the importance of meditation practice. And really, Shoyung Trungpa Rinpoche, he's also the founder of all the Shambhala teachings that he brought from Tibet to the West. So if you've heard of Shambhala, that's Shoyung Trungpa. And as I said, Pema Chodron was a student of his first, and then she became a student of the person who's my teacher now. We both have the same teacher, and his name is Zigar Khantral Rinpoche, also from Tibet. But Shoyung Trungpa talked about meditation as the ground of mind training. So it really is like the foundational practice that underrides all of the other compassion, loving kindness, equanimity. All of those practices rely on the ground practice of meditation, because becoming friendly with one's mind is the most important thing we can do if we want to be more expansive and be able to include others in our lives and or others in our mind stream. So the fact that you're showing up to meditate is a really revolutionary act. And I love that so many of the Buddhist teachings are kind of like the unconventional thing to do. Like, you know, who wants to like sit down and just be quiet and watch their discursive mind go round and round and round? But that is the practice. And it changes over time. And sometimes you've been doing it for years and years and it's still going like that. But the dedication to it and the steadfastness is actually the wind horse energy. So I hope that that's starting to make some sense. And I'm gonna read you a little quote by Shoyung Trungpa. And I think that Emiko put this in the resources. But this is a great book. It's called Smile at Fear, Awakening the True Heart of Bravery. And this, there's a lot of writing in here about Windhorse. So he says, Windhorse arises in the basic atmosphere of awareness and mindfulness. Out of that space of basic constant sanity, a spark of delightfulness or a sudden flash of wakefulness can take place. This happens over and over again in your life. In the course of a day, you might descend into almost a subhuman level of doubt and depression, and then bring yourself back to the level of warriorship over and over throughout the day. The key to cultivating Windhorse is the practice of meditation. So he agrees with me, or let's say I agree with him. So I'm going to take some time now to break us into dyads, and I hope that you'll hang with this and not disappear. If you just totally don't feel comfortable with the dyad, that's fine as well. I'm going to give you two questions, and maybe somebody could type them into the chat for me. Thank you. So if you really don't want to be in a dyad, you could contemplate these questions on your own. But in the spirit of building community with our LGBT Sangha, let's all try to be in a dyad. And I'm happy to be in one as well if the numbers work out that way. So the two questions are, number one, where can you see that Windhorse has already shown up in your life? Because we all have it, so we've all felt it. And then the second question, so share that back and forth. And then secondly, talk about what's an area in your life that you would like to cultivate some Windhorse. So it's really important to dedicate the merit, because we've generated a lot of positivity and a lot of like feelings for others and the world beyond ourselves. So when we practice, we want to dedicate the merit so that energy and that merit can expand out beyond us. And it's another way you can practice, you know, having an impact on the world without actually going out and putting your body on the line. And when I first was learning about this, I was like, I'm a little suspect, you know, it's just like, just because I'm thinking about something. But what I think I talked about this earlier, what I realize is that my heart and my mind are changing as I do these practices. And so then when I have energy and I'm out in the world, I'm going to approach things differently. So there's a great teacher named Shanti Deva, and I highly recommend reading his book called The Way of the Bodhisattva. And the book is written as prose, but it's really kind of like you have to read it without trying to understand it. And then it just kind of softens your mind and softens the way you attach to your own thoughts. And it helps you to just kind of expand into a more spacious mind. And his dedication of the merit is like 5 pages long. So I'm just want to read you a couple of that and then I'll do a dedication. But the idea of the dedication is to just be as outrageous and as grand as possible. Just, you know, don't limit it to anything like all beings. But what about the minerals? What about the plants? Like, just include as much as you possibly can, because then that energy is going out more and more and having a greater and greater effect. So I'll just read two phase kind of little stanzas of his. May all beings everywhere, plagued with suffering of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. From the rains, may the rains of lava, blazing stone and weapons from now on become a rain of flowers. And may all those battling with weapons from now on have a playful exchange of flowers. And by the merit of this practice of our gathering tonight, may all beings in all directions enjoy complete wellness. May they be free from harm. And may all beings find a road to liberation.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.